Welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing well today, Laura. How are you doing?
A little hot, being that it is September, and annoyed that it is so hot because it is very humid, and I'm trying to... Well, let me rephrase that. I want to decorate for Halloween outside because I like to do that first before I do the inside stuff, and it's just so hot out that I can barely even stand to be out there when I'm not working.
I think it's a little amusing that it's hotter where you live today than it is where I live today, and I live 1,000 miles south of
you. Yeah, there's something wrong with that.
There's something wrong with that, but I'll take it. But yeah. Like you said, it is after September. It is getting to that spooky time of season.
Hey, Alexa, shut up.
Why did that even pick up? That's so weird. All right, anyway.
I have no idea.
So, as you said, it is getting to that spooky time of the season where, it's time to start talking about spooky stuff.
I mean, unless it's our case that we do it all year long, but I am extra excited right now.
I am too. It's a favorite time of the year. You know, the fall time, cooler weather, less humidity.
Tennessee is way more humid than I prefer.
Yes, like 2 weeks ago, it was the heat index is getting up to like 110 or 115. It was by far the hottest part of the summer.
Oh my God, 115. Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, when I was working at the nursery, like, we didn't even want to go outside. And to be fair, like, nobody was shopping for plants when it's 115 outside. Nobody wants to plant any holes or dig any holes. Nobody wants to plant anything, which I don't blame them. I wouldn't want to do it either. But the fun thing is that the fall time at the nursery, you get all kinds of the fall things. Like, you get pansies, you get mums, you get pumpkins. Although it's a little early for pumpkins. Not quite yet, but it's getting there. And then, you know, your corn stalks. Best time of the year.
Hands down. Yes. And speaking of, within... Oh, I don't know, a week or so. This probably won't even be out by then. But I am going to Fort Mifflin to do a paranormal investigation, and I am super stoked.
Ooh, I'm not familiar with that place.
It is a military fort, which is basically right by Philadelphia, or I guess it's considered in Philadelphia. I'm going with a paranormal team that has rented it out for the night. So we get to be there till, I think, 6 a.m. or something. So we shall see.
I cannot wait to hear the results of that field trip. Make sure you bring plenty of coffee.
Oh, I know. There's no way that I'm going to make it till 6 a.m. I'm not in my 20s anymore. It's not going to happen. I said to my friend, I was like, do you guys get a hotel and stay overnight? They're like, no, we just stay till whenever and then we drive home. And I'm like, what? Like, no, that's not happening because I cannot function like that anymore. So I'm probably going to end up getting a place to stay or something like that.
I would imagine that's a fairly long drive for you.
It is. Mm-hmm. It definitely is.
That's fun. Yeah, I can't wait. We'll have to do an episode on that one so you can tell us all about it.
Oh, for sure.
Our topic for today is going to be something that's pretty interesting. It's something I've never heard about, and it has to deal with the Aztec death whistle, which sounds absolutely horrifying.
Yeah, and if you listen to it, it's even more horrifying, which I do have a clip of that. Hey guys, so really quick, I am interrupting the podcast because I was able to add a clip of the Aztec death whistle being blown. So if you have headphones in, or if you're driving, you may want to turn down the volume because it is very alarming. So that being said, this clip is from Twin Paranormal off of their YouTube channel, and I will put a link in the show notes. Alrighty, thanks.
What I was trying to do when we start the investigation over there is we all decided on the walk that we were going to go ahead and blow the death whistle. Essentially what the death whistle will do is act as if I am a dying something. So what I'm going to go ahead and do is see if I can reenact what sounds like something who's in pain. And apparently skinwalkers will be attracted to something like that. So I'm going to go ahead and blow it. I'm going to do it.
So anyways, so I will start out with some of the history of the Aztecs. As early as the 13th century, the Aztecs appeared in Mesoamerica as the south central region of pre-Columbian Mexico. There was a tribe there called the Toltecs, and they were located there for about 300 years, and it's said that they started the beginning of militarism in Mesoamerica. One could assume that they were a pretty violent society, but the Aztecs, I think, were worse. They immigrated from the north part of what's called Mexico today, and this could have led to the downfall of the Toltecs. And the Aztecs, or another name for them, was the nomadic Chichimeca tribe of the Mexica. And also, there's a lot of very difficult words to say that I'm not going to be able to pronounce very well, so I'm just going to try my best. And what brought the Aztecs down south was that there was a prophecy from one of their gods, and they traveled south and arrived in the valley of Anahuac, creating a settlement on marsh land near Lake Texcoco called Tenochtitlan. So by the mid-1350s, the Aztecs became the most dominant tribe in the area and basically assimilated all the other tribes in the area, and everybody was basically speaking their language by this point, which I'm not even going to attempt to say because I have no clue, but it is spelled N-A-H-U-A-T-L. By the 15th century, the Aztecs and their first emperor, Iztaccíhuatl, maybe, form a three-way alliance with the city-states of Texcoco, and I'm not sure how you say the old word they have, but now it would be said as Tacuba, and establish joint control over the region. So basically, the Aztecs were so pretty much farther advanced, and they basically just dominated everybody, and they developed social, political, religious, and commercial organization, and they even created marketplaces where it said that about 50,000 people would come visit these marketplaces on days that they were open. And they used early currency, and it had listed some of the early currency was things such as woven cloth or cacao beans. And part of some of the things that the Aztecs produced was headdresses, other attire, feathered tapestries, fine work ceramics, which would include gold, silver, and copperware, precious stones, which mainly were from jade and turquoise. And in the Aztec Empire, they had built temples, palaces, landmarks, and plazas, and they were all adorned with stone statues that they would create to honor, and they would devote these to the gods that they worship. So for that time period, that's a lot.
It kind of sounds like they were, their empire would rival just about anything that was in Europe or Asia at the time. Because if you think about it, like the 1300s in Europe was not a very civilized time at all. The Roman Empire had fallen, and all the kind of countries were kind of loosely defined at that particular point in European history. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, when we think of ancient civilization, you think of the Romans, you think of the Greeks, you think of huge empires, but really the Aztecs should be in that conversation as well, because they had a very good structure. They ruled, what was it, like 15 million people at the height of their empire. And that's not something to sneeze at.
No, not at all. And they also had, I watched a little short video on it, and it was comparing them to the Egyptian pyramids. I know that's not in Europe, but over in Africa. But so they even compared them to some of the structures that they would build to the pyramids. So that's definitely far advanced. In 1519, the Aztecs control most of what is known as Mexico and Central America today. They were at the height of their power when Spanish ships landed in Mexico. And then within 2 years from those ships landing, the Aztec Empire fell. And that's a very short amount of time for considering that they were in power from basically around 1350 to 1519.
And you could also think about this part, you know, we're talking about how big of an empire there actually was. I mean, look how long it took the Roman Empire to fall or the Greeks to fall. Like it took, you know, 1,000 years for the Roman Empire to finally be completely split up. And the Aztec Empire fell in just 2 years.
Yeah, that's wild when you compare that's it like crazy. That. Yeah. Within 2 years, the Aztec Empire fell. Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortes led his people into their capital, Tenochtitlan, and they basically just destroyed it, and it laid in ruins. And the other thing that didn't help was this was just the start of their fall, was that everybody around them, all of the people, the other tribes and everything like that, hated the Aztecs because the Aztecs just used brute force. They forced them to pay costly tributes and they forced them to give them their own people so that the Aztecs could use them for human sacrifice. And so they were very well hated. So Cortez saw this and he used this to his advantage. He took his people and all the people that hated the Aztecs, which was many, used that and combined with Spanish warships, and they had trained horses, trained dogs, and they were able to start to defeat them by this. The emperor of the Aztec people, Montezuma, had believed that Cortez was the bearded god that was prophesied to conquer his people and bring universal peace. And eventually, Montezuma was captured in 1520 and was then killed. And it said that he was maybe killed by his own people. So I'm wondering if his own people killed him. Maybe they didn't want to be this violent society. Who knows? His brother Cuitlahuac took over and led an army and ran the Spanish out of their capital. However, while fighting the Spanish enemy, they contracted smallpox from them. And they think a lot of the smallpox contributed to just completely wiping the Aztecs out.
Just as a little aside here, you know, for people who don't know about smallpox, because it's not a very common thing anymore. Smallpox has basically been eradicated in the world. Smallpox is extremely contagious. The Native Americans in Mesoamerica would have had no inoculations to it at all, none. So it would have just ripped through their population like a hot knife through butter because they wouldn't have known what to look for. They wouldn't have been able to do anything about it because of how virulent and how deadly smallpox actually is.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so that, on top of the fact that the Spanish took their force and all these other people that hated the Aztecs, they ended up surrounding the capital and cutting them off from supplies and food and everything like that. It just basically led the Aztecs to their demise. And the Aztec Empire eventually fell August 13th, 1521. And about 200,000 people died amongst these battles. Now, after this, Cortez became the governor and capital general of New Spain in 1522, and Mexico City was built on the ruins of Tenochtitlan, and Christianity was the new religion brought to the area. So I also came across something that said there was new DNA research, and it shows that a strain of Salmonella called Paratyphi C may have contributed to the downfall of the Aztecs in the 16th century. So if you think about it, the Aztecs, you know, they didn't have indoor plumbing, things like that. So things like this could run rampant.
They kind of had like a triple blow against them. They had the Spanish show up, the Spanish brought smallpox, and then they had another case of Salmonella poisoning on top of all that.
Right. Could you even imagine? It's like all the right place at the right time, just knocked them right out.
100%. I mean, that's, when you look at it that way, it's very easy to see why this very advanced civilization fell so quickly, you know, that they just were completely ravished in the, you know, a little over 2 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's very interesting stuff. I mean, it really is to see how the Aztecs actually fell and why they fell. And one of the other topics that I'd like to bring up here is the Aztec death whistle, which is actually kind of interesting. That's what we were initially going to do this about. And the Aztec did not call the death whistle, obviously, because that's something that we came up with because of the way it sounds, because it is quite a horrendous sound. But I think what's interesting is this thing was not found until, I believe it was the early 19th century, or excuse me, the early 20th century. But they couldn't figure out what it was. And there was a Norwegian guy, his name is Ard Anje Both, and he's a music archaeologist. And he was actually the first one that the Mexican government let him come in and study these objects, because they only found a few of them, and they only found them around temples. And so he got to play it for the first time. He got to do some CT scans of it, x-rays of it, to kind of see how it works and you know, basically study it. You know, what's this all about? There's been a lot of speculation from other people that, you know, that maybe they use this during battle, that because the sound it makes, especially when you scale it up, the sound it makes is quite terrifying. It's very loud. However, that's if you scale this instrument up. The ones they found were fairly small. And when you blow it on it, when it's the small one, it's still not the best sounding. It's not the, you know, most pleasant sounding thing, but it's not this something you would think that would be able to be heard in battle, because it's not very big. It's not very loud. Now, once again, if you scale it up, of course, I can see it that way. But the other thing that gets me is that they never, ever found any of these except around temples. So to me, that comes off as more of a religious artifact, or something they use during their ceremonies, or something along those lines.
Yeah, and you would think, because when I had first heard of them, it makes all the sense in the world if they, say, if they gave a whole bunch of their soldiers, or whatever they would like to call them, these whistles, and they came at their enemy with these. I mean, you would be like, what the heck is going on? It is so scary, and it's kind of almost like, you know, how animals use infrasound to intimidate their prey. So it would kind of be along the same lines. So it's actually surprising to find out that they had only been found around the temples.
To kind of add on that just a little bit, there's an account of a battle made by a Spanish friar, Tomas de Torquemada, I think. And he wrote that one of the Aztec generals was carrying a drum on his shoulders, which he played at the start of the battle, while others blew large shell trumpets. Like, it doesn't really say a whole lot about, like, a whistle, more of a shell type one. And, you know, once again, they still haven't found any in any of the battlefields they've excavated over the years where, you know, like, you would think that, you know, if that a soldier would have fallen, it probably would have been attached to a string, maybe around its neck or in its pocket or something along those lines. And they haven't found that. That's not to say it wasn't used. That just means they just haven't found it yet. So until we can find one that's on a battlefield, I think the assumption would be that it was more of a ceremonial type object, not a battlefield object. So one of the other things that we found while we were researching this particular topic is the practice of Aztec using human sacrifice. They did it quite often for a lot of different reasons. So we want to share some of the things that we learned while researching the death whistle.
Okay, so I'll start off here, and this overlaps just slightly of what I had spoken about earlier. When the Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortes and his men arrived in Aztec capital in 1521, they described witnessing a grisly ceremony. Aztec priests, using razor-sharp obsidian blades, sliced open the chest of sacrificial victims and offering their still-beating hearts to gods. They then tossed the victims' lifeless bodies down the steps of the towering Templo Mayor. A conquistador described two rounded towers flanking the Templo Mayor made entirely of human skulls, and between them a towering wooden rack displaying thousands more skulls with boring holes on either side to allow the skulls to slide onto the wooden poles.
Reading these accounts hundreds of years later, many historians dismiss the 16th century reports as wildly exaggerated propaganda meant to justify the murder of Aztec Emperor Montezuma, the ruthless destruction of their capital, and the enslavement of its people. But in 2015 and 2018, archaeologists working at the Templo Mayor excavation site in Mexico City discovered proof of widespread human sacrifice among the Aztecs. None other than the very skull towers and skull racks that conquistadors had described in their accounts. While it is true the Spanish undoubtedly inflated their figures, Spanish historian Fray Diego de Duran reported that 80,400 men, women, and children were sacrificed for the inauguration of the Templo Mayor under a previous Aztec emperor. Evidence is mounting that the gruesome scenes illustrated in the Spanish texts and preserved in temple murals and stone carvings are true. Why did they carry out such brutal ceremonies? Professor at Tulane University explains the practice held spiritual significance for the Aztecs, and I quote, "It was a deeply serious and important thing for them. Large and small human sacrifices would be made throughout the year to coincide with important calendar dates," he explains, "to dedicate temples, to reverse drought, famine, and more," end quote.
The rationale for Aztec human sacrifice was first and foremost a matter of survival. According to Aztec cosmology, the sun god was waging a constant war against darkness, and if the darkness won, the world would end. To keep the sun moving across the sky and preserve their very lives, the Aztecs had to feed the sun god with human hearts and blood. Human sacrifice also served another purpose in expanding Aztec empire of 15th and 16th centuries intimidation. The ritual killing of war captives and the large-scale displaying of skulls were visceral reminders of the strength of the empire and extent of its dominion. DNA tests to recover victims from the Templo Mayor site show that the vast majority of those sacrificed were outsiders, likely enemy soldiers or slaves. They say across history and cultures, the rise of ritual human sacrifice often coincides with emergence of complex societies and social stratification. It's particularly effective method of imitating rivals and keeping your own people in line. Just look at the gladiator battles of Imperial Rome or the mass burials of servants and captives alongside Egyptian pharaohs and Chinese kings. Also, as hard as it is to imagine, many captured soldiers, slaves, and Aztec citizens went willingly to the sacrificial altar to give their heart to the sun god. It was a tremendous honor and guaranteed ticket to a blessed afterlife fighting in the sun god's army against the forces of darkness. The nature of the warfare during the height of Aztec people was also unique. By the late 15th century, the Aztecs had won over large swaths of central and southern Mexico. The only remaining holdout was one of the neighboring cities to the east. Instead of engaging in violent battles to the death, the Aztecs and their neighbors to the east agreed to fight so-called flower wars, ceremonial battles in which the goal was to capture, not kill, as many enemy combatants as possible. They say that these battles provided an important venue for young Aztec warriors to gain social status by bringing home a gaggle of captives, some whom would ultimately be sacrificed. Well, that defeats the point of agreeing to not kill people.
That does sound kind of weird, but I mean, it kind of makes sense too. Like, you know, they tell their neighbors who they obviously want to conquer that, hey, we're going to fight this fake war. And then they get all these captives and then bring them back and execute or sacrifice them.
Which is, yeah.
Kind of makes sense.
It's a double win for them because instead of just slaughtering them on the battlefield, they get to bring them home and sacrifice them.
So I got one more little thing to add to this, and this is the, I'll just read it. In addition to slicing out of the hearts of their victim and spilling their blood on the temple's altar, it's believed that the Aztecs also practiced a form of ritual cannibalism. The victims' bodies, after being relieved of their heads, were likely gifted to noblemen and other distinguished community members. 16th century illustrations depict body parts being cooked in large pots, and archaeologists have identified telltale butcher marks on the bones of human remains in the Aztec sites around Mexico City. While it was long theorized that Aztecs only engaged in ritual cannibalism during times of famine, another explanation is that the consuming the flesh of a person offered to the gods was like communing with the gods themselves. As off-putting as it sounds, he says that ritual cannibalism most likely existed among the Aztecs and would have been considered not only normal, but a great honor. I just want to say I'm glad we live in civilized times versus the Aztec Empire.
I think if we jump back to our Valentine's Day episode, I'm pretty sure you said the exact same thing.
Well, at least I'm consistent with what I believe.
Me too. That is disgusting.
And fairly horrifying, too. So now think about this. So for the Aztec Empire, that not only were they warlike, they conquered or dominated and assimilated all the tribes around their area. They slaughtered their own people, saying it was a religious thing. They slaughtered their enemies, saying it was a religious thing. I don't know how many died from smallpox, but it was probably a lot, which is a horrifying way to die. Salmonella, if anybody's been food poisoning, you know how bad salmonella poisoning can be. And then you have a bunch of white guys that showed up on a ship saying they were part of a prophecy, but they end up slaughtering you. So, yeah. I'm good, man.
Definitely pass on that.
But, it is kind of interesting, too, when you think about the religion of it. Like, they had a religion that was almost tailored to complete control over their civilization. They made it so they had to sacrifice people to appease their gods. And so you wouldn't want to really go against the government, per se, because they will say, oh, well, you're getting sacrificed to the sun god tomorrow. Sorry about your luck.
Yeah, but then also I was going to say they're basically like a cult, because some of these people wanted to willingly die for being sacrificed because they thought it was a great honor to rule or fight next to the sun god.
Yep. Yeah, that's just it's really interesting to see how ancient civil, and I say ancient, I mean 700 years ago, that's fairly ancient, I guess, but how their religion developed. They use their religion almost as a form of government, because he was the emperor, he was the top religious person. And those kind of things are fairly interesting in the whole scheme of things.
But what is it, though? If you look back into all pretty much, like, I don't know. I don't want to say all because I don't know, but ancient civilizations, a lot of it involved human sacrifice. Why is that? Why did these people think that? I don't know.
That's actually a fairly good question. And, we did talk about a little bit that, there was plenty of human sacrifice in Egypt, China, of course, the Aztecs. You could make a case that that's the ultimate sacrifice, right? If you give up your life, that is, you're giving 100% to that. So I could kind of see it in that particular term, but still, I like my civilized time.
Yeah, me too. So, I mean, that pretty much just wraps up this episode. We didn't really find as much on the quote-unquote death whistle as we wanted to, because going into it, I really thought there would be a whole lot of it. It ended up being more of a history lesson, kind of.
But I still learned a lot, and I highly recommend, we'll put links in the show notes to the two different ones, the original one and then the bigger version. Definitely try to listen to them because it is very unique sounding.
Yeah, I don't recommend headphones for it because I just don't recommend headphones. All right, well, thanks for listening, guys. And as always, if you want to email us, midnight_inthemountains@yahoo.com. Find us on Instagram. I'm going to throw a link in the show notes. And that's all I got for this week. See you guys later.
See you guys later.